Who were you before you lost your wild self?
That's what we're helping you explore on the Tend Her Wild podcast.
Through questions and tools around how best to listen to your inner voice,
rewild ourselves, and live the most authentic life where we thrive instead of survive.
I'm Betsy.
And I'm Kate.
And we're so glad you've joined us for this episode.
Hello, Tend Her Wild listeners. For season two, we want to hear from you. We want to ask that you email us or call us and leave us a voice message sharing your story, your questions, the topics you want to hear more about, or your thoughts on rewilding and living your authentic life. To reach us, you can email us at tendherwild@gmail.com or call us at 319-354-354. 4062 and leave us a message. We'll even play your question live on our show.
Hi, Tend Her Wild podcast listeners. It's Kate and I here today to talk about the broad topic of meditation. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
We want to do a little shout out to one of our assistants who helps with this podcast, Sean. Several months ago, he said, "You guys got to do an episode on meditation," and we never did. So here we are, I think maybe both realizing we need meditation. And so we thought we'd talk about it today.
Feels timely right now to talk about this tool.
Yes. And all of you have been to the grocery store and you see the Newsweeks and the Times magazine, and there's always a special on meditation or mindfulness. And so clearly the information is out there for people about why meditation is so helpful. There's a ton of data supporting it now. It's a thousands of year old practice, but people are more curious about it. And yet I find it's really hard for people to commit to doing it on a regular basis. So we thought we'd talk about maybe our own personal journeys with it and hopefully provide some encouragement to the listeners.
Yeah. It feels like an ancient practice that has become mainstream, at least in conversation, but maybe not used quite with the fidelity yet. Like it's people are talking about it and opening up about their belief in it, but it's still something that takes a lot of time to really ingrain into your habits.
Yeah. I think it's just like any habit, that like exercise or healthy eating, it isn't something that happens overnight. It's maybe something you play around with and then you leave it for a while and then you come back to it. I mean, that's my story. And then you leave it for a while and then maybe something really intense happens and you're like, okay, I'm finally committing to it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And there's lots of tools to help people do that too now with apps and things. So, yeah. So let's start with the first meditation class I ever took was with you. I had meditated some before that, and we'll get into that. But will you share with our listeners about the different types and really define it for us?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many different definitions of meditation, but I personally like paying attention on purpose. It's just like paying attention to what's happening moment to moment on purpose. And I think where people do get confused is there are so many different forms of meditation. And there's not one that is better than the other. I want to preface that. In fact, there's a famous yogi named Neem Karoli Baba who said, "Don't find the best practice, find one that you will actually do, because they are all one." So I think that's really key. Is I think in this culture, we're always looking for the life hack, right? Like, what's the one that's going to get me the benefit quickest? And they're all the same on some level. They're different, but the same. And they're all going to benefit you if you actually do it regularly. So we can consider prayer a form of meditation. There are thousands of guided meditation. What's a guided meditation? It's when someone is with a calm voice talking you through a 15-minute experience. Movement meditation. So you can walk in a mindful meditative way. You can do yoga in a mindful meditative way. So again, I'm present for what is evolving moment to moment as I'm walking. Sometimes the movement ones are much harder to drop in than other forms, but we could call them meditation. Then there's mantra meditation. This is the one that I teach and practice. And it's using a specific phrase to anchor the mind. And then there's mindfulness meditation, which is sort of the one that gets a lot of press and gets a lot of research and is talked about a lot. And again, they're all beautiful. The key is which one works for you and which one will you actually stick with.
Yeah. And when I took that course with you, you had us experiment with different kinds. And that was really helpful initially for me because I immediately thought, oh, I know which one I'm going to like. Right. And it wasn't.
Really? You know? Which one did you think you were going to like?
Well, I thought I needed quiet. So I thought that I would just want to drop in and have kind of this silent meditation. And then I really ended up liking guided meditation. But then I even got deeper than that. And I'm very particular about whose voice is guiding me.
Yeah.
Because I have a different response when I don't feel connected to the voice.
Mm-hmm.
So just experimenting with these different kinds, and we did sound,
mm-hmm.
we did different types that you had us try. And I felt like that was a really good way to start, was just to experiment.
Yeah.
And then sense which one really could I drop into fastest? Which one did I feel? You just feel it. You feel which one is like home to you, like which mm-hmm. one is the most mm-hmm. calming. So that course I took with you was all about experimenting. And so I'd suggest anyone who's thinking of doing it to experiment.
Yeah.
Because you may be surprised at what resonates
yeah.
with you. And I will even say, I did mantra back with a therapist. And she had me start every session with that, with mantra meditation. And I can drop into that so fast. Mm. And it's been 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But I remember the power of that at the time in my life that I was really struggling and how that helped center me before the talk therapy.
Yeah.
So now I, even in my coaching practice, I start sessions with a short yeah. meditation.
Beautiful.
Because I feel like it quiets the mind.
Beautiful.
And so, yeah, I think what's your go-to like, and how did you figure that out?
Well, I always tell people that my first experience with meditation was when I was 21. And I took a J term. It was a month-long course. So I went to school in Minnesota, but I traveled down to Miami, Florida for a month. And part of this rotation, which was in a health psychology, I was in a cancer hospital, actually. Part of my routine, or what I was expected for this month-long experience, was I had to go to meditation every day at noon. So there was a meditation, noon-hour meditation. And this was, by the way, y'all, in the 1990s when meditation wasn't what it is yet. This was still kind of like, this was a holistic-based place. It was accepted there, but it wasn't really well-known or talked about. So I remember when I was told I was going to have to go to meditation every day in this dark conference room, I was kind of upset because it was Miami, Florida, and I'd left like cold Minnesota in the month of January. And so I wanted my noon hour to go sit outside in the sun. And so I was a little grumbly about this, but I went every day, and it was guided meditation. So it was a different person there each day guiding the meditation. And I went. And so, you know, that's 30 days of meditation. And it's interesting because I know the research now. And within 30 days, you start to see benefits. And stuff happened. Like I felt things. I had, you know, images come through for me. Like I felt my body shifting. But I didn't have a language. I didn't really know what was happening. And on the last day of my experience, I was saying goodbye to everybody. And one of the women who had done many of the guided meditations, she was actually a chaplain. She came up to me and she grabbed my forearms and she looked me deeply in the eye. And she said, "Betsy, if you decide to keep meditating from here on out every day, your life will be changed forever." And I remember my eyes were really big and I was like, yes, yes, this was amazing. I'm going to go home and do it. And so I actually did go home and do it. I went home to my little teeny college in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And I went to my psychology professor, Dr. Barbara Simpson. And I said, "Dr. Simpson, I want to start a meditation group on campus." And she was this cool old hippie psychology professor. And she's like, great, I'll find you a room. And so it was like this dark room back by the rat lab in the psychology. And I remember we put it out to all the psych majors and two women showed up. And we did it once a week and had all these cassette recordings. This shows you how old I am. I had all these cassette recordings.
Did you have a boombox?
I did have a boombox. And I had all these scripts that I had collected in that month. And I would either read the script or once a week we would get together or we would play a recording. And what's interesting is these two women were clearly getting something out of it because they came every week, right? So for the rest of my senior year, like, meditated every week. And then I graduated and then life went on and then I didn't do it anymore. Or I say that I was an oh shit meditator. So like when things were bad, like, oh shit, life is falling apart, I'm going to go back because I remember I felt really good when I was doing that. And so I, you know, went in and out of it for years and believed in it and told clients, yeah, you should do this. But I wasn't a committed meditator until about 9 years ago. And now I can say I've meditated every single day for nine years.
Yeah. How long do you do it a day?
It depends on a day where I do it at least 15 minutes first thing in the morning. My preference is to do more like 30, but sometimes that doesn't work out. But yeah. I try to always get in 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it's been, I've definitely fallen into the category of an oh shit meditator throughout the years. I was introduced to it probably in college too, like, cause I was a psychology major and it was like kind of out there as something that you should think about, but it felt a little foreign. I love that you actually went to a place that it almost feels like to really start doing it, having a little community is powerful.
And I actually think having a teacher.
Yes.
And I didn't really have one teacher, but I had lots of people that, and then that one woman at the end who was like, you should commit to this.
Yeah.
I agree. Like, it's like anything, trying to figure it out on your own without.
Yeah.
Cause someone says meditation is very simple. It's a simple process, but it's not easy. Mm-hmm. And so I think you do need support and encouragement from a teacher or a community to kind of stay with it.
Yeah. Till
it's wired in.
And you really get a sense of the benefits, because that is how a habit forms, is, you know, that consistency. And so I think that's easier to do with a group. So it probably wasn't until I think I had that consistency, like I said, with that therapist that was so consistent with me.
Mm.
And she helped me really see how it calms a busy mind. And so much of what I was experiencing during that time in my life, I was a stay-at-home mom. I was struggling. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life because I didn't think I wanted to go back to practicing law, but I didn't know what I should be doing. And I felt guilty that I didn't want to just be home anymore.
Yeah.
So I was in this very anxious state, and she would, every time I'd walk in, I could feel the effect of that first 5 minutes.
Yes.
And how it would shift me.
Even
and
5 minutes.
It was 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was a mantra. And then our sessions would go
so much differently.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I see that now with clients, like, people often, because I do most of my work on Zoom, and, you know, you get into that Zoom room and the energy comes right through the computer.
Yeah.
And so being able to also, like, let people let go of what's, you know, very active in their mind at the moment, clearing that out before starting.
Yeah.
To me, I feel like our sessions go better. So that was a real gift to have. And then the gift of you during another difficult time in my life, when I remember the email coming and it was like, there's a course. And I was just drawn to doing it. I didn't really know what was going to come of it, but I knew I needed something.
Yep.
And then that little community formed in your class. And then
we would sit and meditate.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So yes, I agree. I think having that teacher and reaching out and getting that, making that connection to others is your greatest kind of foundation.
It's helpful.
Yeah.
Today's episode is supported by Dr. Yoga Mama. This is Dr. Betsy, and if you are interested in working with me in a deeper way, you can check out all the different offerings I have going on: online courses, retreats around the world, weekly yoga classes, and my monthly Wisdom Wednesday, which is the first Wednesday of each month, where I talk about the intersection of yoga, psychology, mindfulness, and spirituality. You can find it, all the information, at www.dryogamama.com.
This episode is also being sponsored by Kate Moreland Coaching. If you have an interest in transformational coaching, either in an individual or group setting, please reach out to katemorelandcoaching.com.
Well, I think it's really important to talk about the myths of meditation, because that's what I find, is that everyone has heard of meditation. Everyone, you know, knows that meditation is helpful and useful. It's like exercise. We all know that it would be good to get out and exercise every day, but do we actually do it? Like, what's blocking us? And I think there's some very real things that block people from staying with meditation. So I think it would be good for us to talk about it. And I would love to, as I talk about these things, Kate, hear like your experience with it. I mean, the first myth I think that happens for people is they believe that, you know, meditation should be some like blissful enlightenment experience where there's rainbows and peace and they see like a celestial being and they walk away totally enlightened. And, you know, and that's just not actually what meditation is about. Like, did you have that perception that something like special was supposed to happen during meditation?
I think there's been times in my life where I wanted answers to come. So I would, in my impatient personality, sometimes I'd be like, okay, I'm going to meditate and the answer will come to me. Yeah. It was often when I let go of any expectation that I got the most out of it.
Yeah. Well, and I, you know, having this relationship to meditation in these last 9 years, I will say that a lot of the days are very boring. There's nothing that happens. There are a lot of days that it feels, or especially on busy days, it'll feel like I don't have time for this. It's a waste of time. There's so many other things I need to pack into that 30 minutes before I get out the door. Because I'm not every time I'm sitting down having these like blissful floating on clouds. That was beautiful. I feel it. Actually, all the benefits from meditation happen
later
as your day progresses.
Afternoon is when I feel
it's not about the actual time you're sitting there watching your freaking neurotic mind conjure up another thought that's taking you into another story. Like, in some ways, it's not necessarily always pleasant even.
Right.
So the real benefits are coming later on and how your life unfolds, not how it feels in the 15 minutes you're sitting in meditation. So that's a big myth to bust. It's like, you won't always feel good when you're meditating.
Right.
And you're not doing it wrong if you don't feel good.
Yeah. It's almost like I think about how they tell us, you know, start your day with good protein, like nourishment. To me, it's like mental nourishment, and you don't necessarily feel the effects late till later, right?
Yeah.
With protein, it stays with you. And, you know,
yeah,
it's the same sort of thing where, you know, it's like you're making an investment in nourishing your mind, and then it pays off later on because you're not as anxious later on, and you handle the day a little bit better. And there's a sensation for me that comes later in the day that isn't the days that I feel it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I try to get it. Then I'm like, okay, I'm going to take a few minutes, or I do walking meditation a lot too. Cause on walks, I try to be present and slow things down. But, but it's certainly better when I do it in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. The morning time, at least in the style that I'm trained in, they say that's the golden time to meditate. And it's a really simple reason. So we have 60 to 80,000 thoughts that happen in a day. Mm. So like one new thought every 0.4 seconds. And that's only if you're not stressed out. If you're stressed out, you have way more than 80,000 thoughts a day. Because the more stressed out we are, the more thoughts get generated. So when you meditate, you start to, when you first wake up, your mind, you are going to start to generate thoughts, but you're still a little sleepy. And so they're not quite as fast moving.
Yeah.
And so it's actually the easiest time to meditate when you first wake up.
Okay.
Like, I always tell people,
you're already in a calmer state.
Get up, pee, and then go do your meditation. And so that's like, it's just in some ways it's set up the most perfectly for us to sit and meditate.
Mm-hmm. I heard recently that over half of the time we are thinking about things other than the present moment. I think it's probably more than that.
I would say it's more than half.
Constantly either thinking about the future or the past. And so
totally.
It's also like training. It's like a retraining.
It is training. It's training. And it's really interesting. Yeah, that's called our default mood network, which is when we're not in conscious thought, like doing our taxes or doing our emails. We are usually floating back into the past or floating forward into the future. There's a lot of rumination. There's a lot of worry. And when you meditate, you actually quiet this default mode network. And in fact, people that are lifelong meditators, and I'm meaning more like the monks and the lamas, and all, they've studied these people in their brains. And it shows that they actually are always in present moment. And like their brains don't go into default mode network in the same way that the average brain does, which also means they're not suffering in the same way, because we suffer by worrying about the past or the future. Mm-hmm. And so when you are training yourself, I'm just showing up here. I'm just showing up now. So even you listeners right now, whatever you're doing, just like in this moment, it's all okay.
Right.
Right.
That's where the peace is, the present.
Yes, it's in the present moment, but we have to train ourselves because our brains won't stay in the present moment without the training.
Right. Which is really human nature too, because we're all about survival. And so we're evolving as humans to be able to do this. And it takes practice.
It does take practice.
I love too that I think kids, I don't know if your kids, especially my youngest and actually my oldest too, not so much my middle, but I'm working on him. I feel like they understand it on some level. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't have that language as a child. I didn't know. No one was talking about meditation at school, or nobody was sharing that as a tool. So I'm hopeful that with each generation, it becomes more of a common, a tool that they're, I think, going to need even more than we do, just with the fast-paced world we're in too.
Yeah, I'm thinking about like meditation wasn't even a term that was in my world growing up. Or if it was, it would have been more disparaging because it didn't necessarily fit into the context of religion per se. Mm-hmm. And so it would have been like weird granola hippies do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas now I think we're seeing, now that science has established all these benefits, now it's sort of accepted across different social context, and it's more of a health thing versus, or at least that's what it's, you know, shown. To me, it's a very deeply spiritual practice, but, you know, for many people, it's like they want the health and the mental benefits, which is great. Like, let that be your gateway drug into meditation, that yes, you will have, your stress will be lower, your mind will be clearer, you'll have less anxiety.
What does Deepak say about the number of people we need to be in this practice for world to be
so shifted? Many people have heard of Deepak Chopra. He actually is my meditation teacher, so it's who I trained with, and he is quite a human. And he had the goal when he started primordial sound meditation, which is the style he teaches. He started this, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, that he wanted to get started out as 1 million people meditating. And he's done that because he's, of course, gone with Oprah, and they've done all these 21-day meditation challenges. Right. And so if you get with Oprah, you reach the masses. So definitely he's helped 1 million people meditate. So now his goal is 1 billion. And he has a theory, and I really think there's something to this. He said one time in a training, we don't need everyone on this planet to meditate. He's like, we do not need everyone.
Right.
But we need a certain amount to be the tipping point to tip our planet toward more peace and toward more evolution and awareness of the interconnectivity of us all. So that's his goal, is like, if we can get 1 billion people waking up conscious, doing meditation, that's going to potentially save the whole planet. Mm.
That seems so important right now to consider too, and wanting to be one of those people, right?
Yeah.
The power that you have as an individual and how that ripples out to the collective, because it is a time when we need more peace. We need more consciousness, all of that. And being part of that solution feels really big.
Yeah. And I feel like we've been talking a lot about it on this podcast, about when the world outside is so complicated and so toxic and so chaotic, that our our sort of work is to go in and make sure our internal space is as calm and clear and settled as possible, because that then ripples out mm-hmm. to the world around us. So it's the concept, so within, so as without, right? It's like yeah. when we're nurturing and clearing our inner space, then our spaces, the outer spaces, begin to shift and change. And I think that's Chopra's point, right? Like when people are clearing and taking care of and settling their inner spaces, then the world does change automatically because of that. And so I actually think sometimes of my own practice as its own form of social justice, right? Like as I continue to be able to find deeper levels of peace and grounding in myself, and then I'm out in the world, in the community with people, that is a form of beginning to shift mm-hmm. energy, shift hate, shift, you know?
Yeah.
So it's one form. I'm not saying it's the only form of social justice that I hope to engage in, but it's one way I think that we can be of benefit to the world around us.
Absolutely. And I think there's a sense sometimes that we feel kind of helpless in this chaotic, uncertain world. So to me, it's a tool that allows you to take charge of for yourself in those moments that is empowering.
Yeah.
And so when you look at it that way, that you're investing in keeping yourself grounded amidst all the chaos.
Yes.
It can feel empowering instead of, you know, yeah. feeling helpless, which is often,
yeah,
you know, how we feel today. And I think it's a wonderful thing to model for your kids too, because I think
mm-hmm.
I remember my kids talking with them about it, knowing that I was doing it. I'd shut my door and like Joe would almost protect that time for me.
Mm.
And I think that was good for them to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never done any kind of formal training with my kids. I did, so the style of meditation I teach, you get a personalized mantra based on your birth time. And so I was able to get the personalized mantra for my family. And I remember I did this whole thing where I like gifted present each of them their mantra. And I'd put it like, I put it on this back of a little like stone and all of that. And they were all like, thanks, Mom. And, you know, just kind of put the stone away. Like, and it was a lesson to me that you don't shove this stuff down people's throat until they're ready. Like, people need to come to you. People need to be ready for this. So even if you're listening and you're not ready, like, don't, like, there comes a moment in time when people are ready. So it was, I think I felt like sad afterwards. Like, okay, I spent all this time getting their mantras and no one is interested in it. And now I really am like, oh, it's totally okay.
Yeah.
But what happens is meditation is so normal to them in our house. Like, Mom is up there meditating, or, you know, like they get it. I hope they feel a difference in me when I come down in the morning, or if they're not conscious of it, maybe it's wiring in at a deeper level. So
you're planting the seeds.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me talk about one more myth, because okay. we talked about yeah. the myth of you should be feeling something special, like floating on a cloud. And I'm just going to tell you, don't expect no. that. And the second thing that I hear all the time was like, well, I just can't get my thoughts to stop. My mind just keeps going the whole time in meditation. I'm like, yep, sure does. Yep.
Not the goal.
Sure does. And it's going to. So I think that's the other big myth, is mm-hmm. that people believe like, my mind should go blank. I should be in complete peace and quiet. And it's like, no, good luck with that. Right. I don't tell me how that works for you, because it's not going to happen. I mean, our brains aren't designed to stop thought. Like, our brains are designed to create thought, and the thoughts aren't you. That's the other thing that I've learned so much. Those thoughts that are being generated by your brain, they're not you. So don't get caught up in the storyline of what they tell you
right.
about yourself, because they're just thoughts.
Yeah.
Meditation helps create a little bit of space between you and your thoughts. You be able to develop this capacity to witness yourself and witness yeah. your thoughts. And that makes all the difference in the world. But it is a process that I think comes over time, this capacity to witness, instead of just be on the treadmill of life, just sort of unconsciously going through life and believing that little gremlin in your head that's telling you, talking shit about you, right? It's not you.
Right. Yeah. Someone told me once, it's like watching leaves in a stream. Each thought is like a leaf and it's just floating by, but you're just acknowledging, there goes one, there goes another one. So the thoughts are happening and you're just allowing them to come and go.
Yeah.
You're not trying to clear them all out. You're not trying to rake all the leaves. You're allowing them to go by.
And sometimes those leaves that go by, I will say, are really distressing. So I just want to point that out too, right? Like sometimes the thoughts that you witness are really distressing and you want to do what you normally do, like run or go, you know, have a cup of coffee or start to scroll. And so, and the point of meditation, I think, is learning to stay. Like, okay, all these thoughts are going through. Some are neutral, some are positive, some are really ugly and negative and really demeaning of me and the world and judging and critical. And okay, can I just continue to just be with everything that's coming through?
Yeah.
That's, I think, the power of learning and practicing meditation. So you start to be able to sit with everything.
Right. Which allows you at 4 o'clock at the end of the day to sit with things better. So the training that you're doing then shows up for you. That's what I have noticed. My handling of things later feels like what might have knocked me out doesn't, because I'm riding the waves differently.
Yeah, riding the waves. That's perfect. Yeah, we have more of a capacity to respond versus react.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think before I got serious about meditation, I would react to things. Like it would be like a gut reaction or a gut explosion, or, you know, I'd have this deep reaction even if I didn't speak it. Whereas with meditation, it's almost like there's more space now between the event that still will trigger me. And instead of reacting, there's pause. More space and time for me to respond.
Yeah. The pause exists.
The pause. Yeah. You start to get a little more space.
Imagine a world where more people felt the pause too.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of having more people do this, is there isn't as much reaction.
Yeah.
It's just knee-jerk reactions and explosions.
Yeah.
So it is really powerful. Well, will you, for our listeners, I asked this ahead of time, but just take us through a short meditation so we can experience
Absolutely.
It with you.
And the last thing I want to just encourage all the listeners is you cannot get meditation wrong.
Mm.
You can't do it wrong. So that's the other thing. People worry like, well, I'm not doing it right. You cannot get it wrong.
I don't have the right cushion.
Yeah. I don't have the right recording. I don't, you know, you can't get it wrong. The only way you get it wrong is if you don't do it. But you can't get it wrong. My teacher, Dr. Chirper, would say every meditation is perfect. Mm-hmm. Even if you fall asleep during the meditation.
Which I have done.
Perfect. That's what you needed that day. Mm-hmm. So just trusting that there's no wrong way to do this. So that's why it's sort of exploring and finding the path. And we'll have in the show notes a whole list of resources. There's a couple apps I really like. There's some books I really like. I'll put in there any upcoming meditation classes I might be offering, and we'll just get all that out there for you. But find what works and just know you can't do it wrong.
Right. Start experimenting.
Yeah. Do you, so Kate, you said you wanted me to lead a meditation. Is there any specific focus you want, or just a generalized?
I think maybe just generally, how can you bring us into the present moment through meditation?
Great.
Because we talked about, you know, anxiety, depression, but how can you, through meditation, just help us focus on the moment?
Great. All right, everyone. Well, make sure you're not driving. So if you're driving, pause, and you can come back to this at a later time. So meditation is ideally practiced on an empty stomach, and you're sitting up nice and tall. You're not slouching back in a recliner. You've got a nice upright spine. Your feet are on the floor. You're comfortable. And I'll start this experience with the wise words of Thich Nhat Hanh, which says we meditate so we can keep our appointment with life. To say it another way, we meditate so we can really show up and be fully alive and present for our life. And that's truly the mark of the wild woman as well, by the way. So we start first by just dropping into the body. I want you to see if you can Feel your feet on the ground. Notice sensations of your pelvis in the chair. Pay attention to where your hands are resting. Take a deep breath in. And as you exhale, watch yourself get a little more settled, whatever that means for you. Maybe the shoulders relax down. Maybe the jaw loosens a bit. And I'm going to invite you to do two or three more of these deep breaths where you're breathing into the belly. And on the exhale, you viscerally feel something start to release in the body. Maybe the buttocks unclench this time. Maybe the hands soften. And you can begin to trust that as you continue to breathe throughout this meditation, every exhale your body makes, you soften and you relax just a little more. So we've landed in the body and we begin to bring awareness to the breath. And now we're going to work with the mind. Our mind is not mastered through will or trying hard or goal setting. Our mind is mastered by quieting it. And so for this meditation, we're going to use a very particular tool called a mantra, which simply means a tool for the mind. Gives our mind something to focus on rather than just spinning off in whatever direction it desires. So we learn to anchor the mind, which then begins to slow our thoughts down. So we have more space. We have more moments of quiet. There are hundreds of mantras that one could use. I'd like to introduce the mantra So Hum. So Hum. It's a Sanskrit phrase that simply means I am. And so mantra meditation is very simple. You're just mentally, silently repeating to yourself, So Hum. So Hum. You might notice the mantra could be connected to your inhale and your exhale, or it might be on a completely different rhythm. Both are fine. But your awareness is anchoring into this mental repetition of So Hum. So Hum. When the mind wanders, which it inevitably will do, you will start planning, thinking, rehearsing, remembering. When this happens, just consciously and without any kind of judgment, bring yourself back again to this mental repetition of So Hum. You might notice there have been two trains of thought. There's a part of you that the mind is creating thought, it's thinking, and there's another part of you repeating the mantra. Again, very normal, just staying with coming back to this anchor for the mind. So hum. And then release the mantra. So just let it go and take a moment to just rest in awareness. So without yet moving, just take a moment to rest and feel, serve yourself. We're developing this capacity to witness and observe ourselves moment to moment. Begin to bring a little bit of wiggling into your fingers and toes. You could start to move a bit. And then when you're ready, you can blink your eyes open.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah. It was quick, right? I think that was maybe 5-6 minutes. Doesn't have to take long.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. And for those of you who are curious about, you know, creating a practice, we'll hold your forearms just like that woman did to me 30 years ago and look you in the eye and say, you start to do this every day, it will change your life. Your desires get fulfilled more quickly. You feel more relaxed. Your intuition is stronger.
And connect to yourself.
You're connected to yourself. Yeah.
Thanks, Beth.
Yeah. Thanks, Kate.
Thanks for joining us today. If you like this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review. Come back and rewild with us again next week.